You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
When a priest wants to raise some money for his local parish, he's willing to do whatever it takes to get that cash. And then we take a look at the story of a young man working at a call center who one night receives a call from a customer. This happens hundreds of times a day. But this caller may be trapped in the place between the living and the damned. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a ton of stuff to cover today. So first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Cat. Woohoo, yeah, wee, yeah. Cat's running on in on all fours. A cat through and through. Cat, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. Cat came with her friends Tony and Tori to the Oregon Ghost Conference. Again, really great to see you guys there. Really appreciated all the support, all the love that I got. Even if you weren't able to attend, I know a lot of you guys were supporting me. So, really appreciate that. Cat, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show through the Patreon, if you guys aren't able to see me live, it's totally fine. It is. Truly, it is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show because that'll help the show grow. Really appreciate it. Kat, let's go ahead and get this party started. We haven't used this in a while. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the hair hang glider. Everyone grab onto Kat's ankles as she jumps off the highest point of Dead Rabbit Radio Command and glides us all the way down to Brazil. Nice leisurely glide all the way out there. So, Kat, go ahead and land the... This is actually a great vehicle of choice. I don't really think so much sometimes about what I'm doing on the show, but Kat's flying us around in the hair hang glider, and I point and I look down and I go, hey guys, look at that, look at down there. We're flying over the city of Pirangu. That's in the state of Paraná in Brazil. And it's April 20th, 2008, and we're seeing a guy down there, and a bunch of people are surrounding him, and they're, like, clapping, and he's, like, waving to him. It's not just a normal guy. It's not just some celebrity. It's a guy attached to a bunch of balloons. And I go, if Kat can keep us afloat long enough, we might be able to get a first-class seat to this cluster ballooning attempt. Because that's what's going on. There's this local priest in the area named Adelair Antonio de Carli, 41 years old. On April 20th, 2008, he was preparing a world record-breaking cluster ballooning flight. It's exactly what it sounds like. Imagine that movie Up, but in real life, and not a house. So it's basically not like the movie Up. It's just a bunch of balloons. That's the only thing they have in common. There's a thing called cluster ballooning where you strap all these balloons to you or you strap them to a chair and then you just fly around for a little bit and then you land. It sounds incredibly dangerous, but also sounds kind of fun. Like if I wasn't such a scaredy cat, I'd probably attach a bunch of balloons to me and fly away. Probably also if I wasn't 300 pounds, probably it's a part of it as well. Yeah, you know, I could probably float around for a little bit. I'd be like that dude from Dune. I'd be the Baron. That's who I'm going to be for Halloween. I'm just going to have a bunch of balloons strapped up. I'll be floating like 3 feet off the ground. Bring me the head of Paul Atreides. I'm just going to float around, hit up all the Halloween parties. Well, all the Halloween parties that are held outdoors that I can float by. But this isn't a Halloween story. This priest, Adelair, he is trying to raise money. That's why he's doing this big ballooning attempt. He's actually using it to raise some money for he had some pretty inventive ideas. He's kind of one of those groundbreaking priests. He was always looking at pushing the envelope a bit. One of the things he did was he set up something called the Pastoral Rotavaria, or the Road Ministry. Because in the city, it was a port city, you had truck drivers coming all around. You had truck drivers from coming all over the country. They'd be coming through this port, and he basically set up an impromptu church. So they would have, you know, time to listen to some words of wisdom from the Bible. Maybe if they had a question or if they were struggling with something, he would be there to help them out, to give them advice. It's a pretty neat idea if you think about it. Because truck drivers, so I didn't come up with this myself. I read this in one of the articles, but I don't remember exactly who said it. They go, you know, truck drivers, they leave their families behind for long periods of time. And they do it, sure, to make money, but they really do it for us, for everybody else who needs their goods. Like, even though you do get paid, I mean, army men get paid, firemen get paid, but it's still a pretty dangerous job. And it can definitely have an effect on you mentally. And the same thing with truck drivers. While it might not be as dangerous as running into a burning building, they're saying goodbye to their families for days. And depending on the job, maybe weeks at a time. And it's so we can go to Walmart and get a toaster for $19.99. Like, they're part of that supply chain. And so to have a service like this set up to lift up the spirits, literally in this case, because it's a religious service, of truck drivers, like, that is a needed thing. That really is a needed thing. And he saw that need and he filled it. But he wanted to make some changes to it, some improvements. He wanted to raise money for this program. So he goes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cluster balloon around Brazil. Now, you're probably thinking the same thing I'm thinking. How in the world is that supposed to raise money, dude? Unless you're flown over a bank. I mean, you steal a bunch of money. I don't know how. I guess maybe people were sponsoring him by the balloon or by the mile. Or maybe it would just bring attention. That's most likely. Bring attention to this. Because I didn't know this existed, this road ministry. And let's put it this way. Had this attempt been successful, that should tell you something. And then people probably in Brazil would have been noticing this, and maybe they would have gotten a lot of donations. But he was constantly coming up with these, I don't want to say schemes, like this was a good thing. He also was constantly butting heads with the local government. He found out that the police in this town would sometimes drive around, get homeless people, throw them in the back of their car, and then take them to a neighboring city and toss them out. And he exposed that. He knew that that was happening, and he exposed it, and he kept ruffling feathers till he got all the way to the top, and it ended up getting a couple of cops and at least one official arrested, because he saw that as inhuman. You can't be doing that. I'm sure they were roughing the hobos up a bit, too. I don't think it was like, hey, come in here. We got a nice turkey dinner for you, if they got arrested for it. So a lot of locals saw him as kind of like a Robin Hood-esque hero. He's doing what priests should do, what men of the cloth should do in general, and that's helping the downtrodden. But of course, you had powerful people in the city who really like throwing homeless people in the back of cars, and they didn't take too kindly to Adelier. Now, he finds out that there is a record for cluster ballooning. That's 19 hours. It's the longest time. In 2008, it was the longest time on record for someone to be floating in the air attached to all these balloons. And he goes, you know what? I think I could do that. I think I could do that. I could tie a bunch of balloons to myself. And the way that it works is you can control the height by either letting balloons loose, like cutting them loose or deflating them. You'll land, you know, if you can cut ballast. If you have like water bottles, you can pour water out to help you go higher. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Again, probably the same thought you're having. Okay, so he knows that there's a 19-hour cluster balloon record. He's going to beat it to raise money for his church. He's clearly done this before. Right? If he's planning on beating the world record, he must have done this in his past. No. He has never done cluster ballooning at all. He just found out there was a world record for that. And on his first attempt goes, oh, I can do that. I mean, I got the cops arrested. I got him to stop harassing hobos. Clearly, I can float for 19 hours in 1 minute, even though I've never done anything like this. I have no experience. Don't even know what it entails. I can do it. And luckily, he goes, I've never done this before. I probably should practice somehow, right? I can't start off with 5 balloons and then move up to 10 balloons, because that's not even going to move. It's not enough to lift me up even an inch. And it's not like he can keep adding balloons to it. And then he's spending money that he should spend on the church practicing with this balloon stuff. They're like, Padre, please. You're like floating 4 feet above the podium in the church, the lectern, I forgot what they're called, pulpit. He's floating like 4 feet above the lectern, and people are like, is that what our donations are going to? He's like, yes, just give me more balloons, and I'm going to fly up really high for 19 hours in 1 minute, and then we'll get even more money. And people are like, what? Well, why don't you just not do any of this? He does know he needs to get a little bit of practice, so he actually, 6 months before this date, I mean, he already has a date set in his head. This is what I'm going to try doing this. 6 months before that, he takes a paragliding class. That's probably pretty comparable. Again, just to be clear, no experience in that either. You're like, he must have some sort of floating experience. Maybe he liked to parachute. No, nothing. He takes a paragliding course, and it's a full course. Like, if you think you're going to go and learn how to paraglide, they don't just give you a paraglider and say, jump. Like, that's day one. That's not what they do. They have to teach you all this stuff. And one of the classes was the theory of paragliding. And Adelier goes, nah, I'm good. I don't need to take that class. And they're like, well, you don't have to take that class. I mean, you paid for the whole course. You're right. You could choose not to go to this class. This class is kind of important. Like, even though it might seem boring, you'll learn about, like, wind thrust and when to move up and how not to die. And he's like, la, 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 la. He has his fingers in the ears as he's walking out. The paragliding course instructor goes, he refused to take the theory class. He just thought that you could grab a paraglider and jump. He thought that was going to be day one, apparently. Well, eventually, they are out there in this field for, you know, hands-on instruction on how to use a paraglider. And the instructor's out there with Adelier, and Adelier's like holding onto the paraglider, but they're all just standing on the ground, and this strong wind starts to pick up. And the instructor goes, Adelier, dude, you have to lower the paraglider. You have to, like, you're holding it too high. That wind's going to scoop it up, scoop you up. You're going to go flying off into the middle of this field. And Adelier's like, nah, it's cool, man. I'm totally okay with this. They're like, if you'd gone to the theory class, you would realize this is super dangerous. He was holding it in such a way that what the instructor said came true. The wind, the strong wind blew in, and it lifted Adelier about 6 feet off the ground and sent him and the paraglider tumbling into a nearby cow. Not only does the paraglider ram into the cow and break, it obviously freaks out the cow and it gets tangled up with the cow, and the cow takes off running, dragging the paraglider and Adelier still holding on to it. So he's being dragged across the dirt several feet before he finally lets go. And then he's like, sorry, my bad, I didn't know. I didn't know that wind did that thing to paragliders. I didn't know they included any sort of lift or thrust. He also, at another point, disobeyed the same instructor. I don't know why this instructor even gave him another chance. They're flying over some trees, and Adelier started doing like these loop-de-loops. He started doing this stuff, and the coach is like, don't do that. Don't do that. You're super dangerous. You're going to get other people killed. You're going to get yourself killed. We already know you attacked the cow. After that time, the instructor kicked him out of the course. And Adelier's like, whatever, dude. I'm not even into this whole paragliding thing. I'm a balloon man, as he's walking away. The instructor's like, what's that even mean? Hope it doesn't involve cows. He does, though, say, okay, I'm going to do this in April. I'm going to set this record. I probably should actually practice with balloons. So January 13th, 2008, around 4 months before his record-breaking attempt, he goes, okay, let's strap on 600 balloons. And he was airborne. It's successful, right? I mean, like, this actually worked. No cows were involved. He didn't die. Nothing. That should be a little that should be a little foreshadowing of what's coming. He attaches 600 balloons to him. I believe he's in the chair. I think he's in a chair with a harness. Because, you know, some of these sources it was in Portuguese, and then I'm translating it into English via Google. But I don't know if I think he was in a chair and the harness was wrapped around him. But another source said that he just had a harness and no chair. Adelaire strikes me as the type of guy who would go, why would I need a chair if I'm floating? Like, well, maybe it would just be easier to control. He's like, la, la, la. Why would I need a chair if I'm floating around? So I don't know whether or not he used it. But anyways, he had 600 balloons. He goes up to 17,400 feet. And he floats around for around 4 hours and covers a distance of 16 miles. And then lands. I mean, you can't get more successful than that. That's pretty dope. I'm not that great at math, but what is that? That's almost 20% of what he'll need to hit for his first flight. He does 4 hours, 60 miles. It probably inflated, no pun intended, his ego. It probably really made him think, wow, this is easy. The very first time I did this, it went off without a hitch. He does realize, though, that he has to be prepared. He starts taking courses, not in paragliding, but he takes a jungle survival course and a mountain climbing course. Because now he's saying, you know, worst case scenario. And again, that's not a waste of your time in this situation where you're going to be floating around uncontrollably around Brazil, which is very famous for its mountains and jungles. If something goes wrong and he ends up in the middle of a jungle, he's not going to die immediately. But now it's April 20th. The date of this world record-breaking attempt is about to happen. He does have a chair at this point and 1,000 balloons. And his plan is to fly for 20 hours. And he would like to, you know, you don't really have a lot of control over these things, but he goes, my plan is to fly for 20 hours and then to land where my brother lives in the town of Dorados, which is 500 miles away. Now, he's going to be lucky if he even stays afloat for 20 hours. I don't know why he's like, hey, brother, make sure the Pizza Hut pizza is warm when I get there. Like, I plan on getting to your house. Like, he's got some big, big goals. You got to give him that. He is prepared for this. He has a parachute. Which is kind of a guess. I mean, that's the one thing you should have. We don't know if he ever trained with a parachute. Like, you just can't give someone a parachute and then they know instantly how to use it. But he thinks he's hooked up to the Matrix or something. They can download it in his head. He has a parachute, a helmet, a GPS device, mobile phone, satellite phone, a thermal flight suit. All of this stuff is really necessary. 100% necessary because you'd freeze to death up there. You want to be able to know where you're at with the GPS. You want to be able to contact people with the satellite phone. He also, just in case, brought 5 days of food and water. Which I imagine at a certain point, they go, hey, Adelaire, you know, you could probably have done this with 900 balloons, but the fact that you have 5 days of food and water is all these jugs of water. He's like, but I really love these Doritos, man. I gotta have all these Doritos. He's carrying the heaviest food. He has like a bucket of lard. He's like, I love dipping my Doritos in lard. That's how the cool guys do it. 5 days. Now, that could have also just been like 10 granola bars. Some people, that would be 5 days worth of food. In an emergency situation, that could be 5 days worth of food. Well, it's 1 p.m., April 20th, 2008, and he's ready to go. Adelaire is given the signal, and up and away. And the assembled group is watching Adelaire float up. That was 1 p.m. At 1:20 p.m., ground control receives a phone call from Adelaire. And it honestly might be... Here's the thing, this guy is very well loved in his community. I don't mean to keep cracking a ton of jokes, because this guy is like a local legend, but I'm telling you, everything that Adelaire is about to say in this phone call could have easily been avoided. I'm not blaming him for what's going to happen directly, but at the same time, all of this stuff could have been foreseen and all of this stuff could have been prevented. So I guess I am blaming the victim. Anyways, a call comes in at 1:20 and Adelaire says, quote, "I need to get in touch with the staff so they can teach me how to operate this GPS here." So that's the first thing. He has a GPS. That's great. You need that. He doesn't know how it works. It's just a bunch of numbers. It's just a bunch of numbers. He's like, what? Huh? Oh, man, I should have taken that theory class on GPS. He has the right equipment. And we see this happen. We see this happen all the time. He has the right equipment. He doesn't know how to use it. "I need to get in touch with staff so they can teach me." While he's flying in the air, they need to give him customer service on how to use a GPS thing, which I'm sure isn't easy to explain when the person's standing right next to you, let alone when they're 10,000 feet in the air. But anyways, "I need to get in touch with the staff so they can teach me how to operate this GPS here to give the latitude and longitude coordinates, which is the only way anyone on the ground can know where I am." So that's the thing. He needs to be able to read off the information so they can track him on the ground, but he doesn't know how it works. That's not all, though. That could be remedied somehow. They could figure it out. He's just like, "I'm by a mountain, and there's a bunch of trees on it." And the army's like, "Oh, well, we know where the mountain's at." He also says, the same phone call, he goes, quote, "The satellite cell phone keeps going out of range, and furthermore, the battery is getting low." So I don't know if he's calling on his mobile phone at this point. I don't know if he is using the satellite phone, but it's not charged. He went on a record-breaking 20-hour flying attempt. Doesn't know how to use the GPS. He didn't charge the satellite phone. I don't know a lot about satellite phones. I think the point is that they don't go out of range. It's using satellites to place the phone calls. So again, there might be some user error as far as that goes. He might be thinking it's going out of range. Or the battery could be so low it's not working right. This is all stuff that could have been easily avoided. But it comes from the paragliding thing. He's like, I can't be bothered with the theory stuff. Show me the cool stuff. Give me the paraglider. Let me fly around. And there's nothing you can do. It's not like he can go throw the phone. Well, here's the thing. There's one thing he could do. He could call off the attempt. That's the only course of action at this point, to call it off. But he doesn't. There's no way to charge the battery up there. There's no way to teach someone how to use a GPS out there. He's off in the atmosphere, flying around in the sky, strong winds and bad weather. This is another thing that, had they looked into it, a normal cluster ballooning attempt. These do happen from time to time. It's not the most popular sport in the world, but you'd go, "Now we're not going to do it today. It looks like there's going to be some bad weather." And here's the thing. This was big news locally and probably even nationwide in Brazil. So there was a lot of interviews and a lot of articles after what's about to happen happens. And that's where we get a lot of this stuff about the paragliding course. The guy who taught the paragliding course was interviewed about everything that happened with Adelaire, everything that's about to happen. And the flight instructor said, "I wouldn't fly a plane in the weather that he was ballooning in. He 100% should have called it off. So unsafe." What was going on? It wasn't just bad weather. It was the beginning stages of a tropical cyclone. But he wanted to do it on that day. But anyone with any aviation experience would be like, "You can't. Like, do it tomorrow, or maybe the day before, or maybe in a couple years when you're really good at it." He flies way up. He gets blown off course. By 8:45 p.m., His goal was to go up 10,000 feet. The first time he went up 17,000 feet, and he didn't really like that. That's super high. He went up 10,000. His goal this time was 10,000 feet. A nice, lazy 10,000 feet. By 8:45, he's 19,000 feet in the air. He's also completely off course. This whole idea of flying out to his brother's house, kiboshed. He's traveled so far. He's traveled 56 miles total. 30 of those are over the ocean. He's flown past Brazil. He's off the coast. He's floating over the ocean. And 8:45, he makes another phone call to the Brazilian Navy to give his location. Here's the thing. If your GPS ain't working that well, just read them all the numbers, right? I'm going to read you all the numbers on this thing. You guys can figure it out. I might be messing up the longitude, latitude, whatever. You'll be able to figure it out somehow. He gives the Navy his location at 8:45. Shortly after that, all contact is lost with Adelaire. As soon as they can, search parties are established. But because this is 30 miles off the coast, it's not like you can get you and your buddies, you and your neighborhood pals to walk through the woods looking for somebody who goes missing, right? Missing kid, missing pet, whatever. It's in the middle of the ocean. So you kind of got to leave it to the experts. You had the Navy, the Brazilian Navy out there looking for him. Brazilian Air Force, part of the search party. You even had firefighters out there looking for him, you know, in their boats. But after 4 days, the search is called off. This was a big news story, and because it was just so weird. It was so weird. And you had 6 days after, so now we're on April 26th, there was a press conference, and they said, you know, we're still holding out hope that Adelaire is alive. In fact, there's an 80% chance that he's still alive. That was their prediction. 3 days later, April 29th, they go, he's probably not alive. He's probably not alive anymore. I don't know if that was just statistical. I don't know if they go, well, if he had 5 days worth of food and water and he's still floating around up there. Or I don't know what caused them to change the outlook so much in those 3 days, but they go, he's probably not alive. After that, balloon fragments begin to be found floating off of the coast of Brazil. July 4th, 2008, there is this oil rig off the coast of Brazil, and there is a boat headed out there, a company boat headed out to the oil rig, and they find 62 miles off the coast of Brazil, they find the lower half of a human body. It's so creepy. They find the lower half of a human body. They bring it on board. And eventually it's taken back to the authorities. They do a DNA. They do DNA testing on it. It is the remains of Adelaire. This half of his body, the only half that's ever been found, apparently, was returned to his town, where it was greeted with a round of applause. 500 people showed up for his funeral. And he was buried in a special chapel in the area. Tragic story for multiple reasons, and creepy really for one, but tragic because after he died, the road ministry stopped existing. The church that he set up for the truck drivers, there was nobody to run it. So it just kind of, he was doing this to raise money for the church, but his death caused the end of it. And this was needed in this community. You have a group of people who don't get home that often. And when they do, they got a whole list of things that they need to do for their wife or hang out with their kids or do this, that, other thing. And they want that spiritual attention. They have those questions and those things they need to help get resolved But I'll figure that out later. I'll do that. I got to mow the lawn first. And the road ministry allowed them a little bit of peace and a little bit of communion, literally in this case, but also figuratively communion with a priest, you know, someone you kind of need to talk to, get some advice from, things like that. That sucked. Also, you have the idea that this man was really loved in the town, and he was doing a lot of good for people, and his death, which was completely avoidable. He could not have done the cluster ballooning attempt in the first place, or if he was going to do it, could have really, first off, plugged in the satellite phone, but, you know, talk to people who know about aviation, take the paragliding course, and listen to people when they tell you how to deal with the air. These are things that probably could have been prevented. It's such an odd thing to jump to as well. But it's creepy to me. We'll wrap this up like this because the story went on a bit longer than I thought. I hope we have time for the call center story. We'll do a second story no matter what. But I know nowadays it wouldn't be the case. Because now we're, what, 16 years since this story took place? But I'm sure for a good period of time, up in the sky, there was a cluster of balloons attached to the upper half of a human body. Just flying through the sky. The upper half of a man in a harness attached to a chair that's attached to an ever-dwindling amount of balloons. Each day, one or two or three more balloons pop. But the remaining balloons keep this chair aloft for just another day. As half a human body is sitting there, staring blankly out across the ocean. And this would continue on and on until either all the balloons popped, or the body, due to decay or liquefaction, slipped through the harness and fell to the ocean or even ground below. But for a time, there was half a person flying through the sky. 'Seeing a view of the world that most of us will never experience. Looking out over the vastness of the world, not encased in some sort of metal tube or poking your head out of a biplane of the thunderous roar of the engine filling your ears. Not in a hot air balloon with four other people jostling for a good view. No, just Adelaire. Just Adelaire sitting in a balloon above it all. The quietness, the tranquility, all belong to Adelaire and Adelaire alone. The stories he could have told us about what he saw, the only problem is he was dead. So he has no stories to tell. His eyes couldn't take in the beauty of the world. It was just this corpse of a man floating in the sky for who knows how long. Until finally he fell back to Earth. It's a crazy story, too. I don't know how he died. I mean, you figure he didn't. I assume that he didn't crash. Because the fact that his lower body is what was found, that would be the part of you that rotted off of you if the rest of you is in a harness attached to a chair. The bottom, but what killed him? I'm curious, did he starve to death? There's not much that could go wrong when you're 20, there's a lot that can go wrong when you're 20,000 feet in the air, but you think he just got battered around so much by like a cyclone that he got brain damage and died? Like, I don't know actually what would kill you. You could go up too high and freeze to death. You could die of exposure. That would probably be possible in that situation, but yeah, just half of him floating around They never, as far as I can tell, they never found the other half of him. Creepy story and bizarre. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He didn't need to do it. But he did it. There is that notion of wanting to do things other people don't do. That conqueror spirit that I believe rests in so many of us to this day. I'm not knocking him for the attempt. I get it. It's just such a dangerous thing to do for your first time. Okay. So, Kat, I don't think we have enough time to tell the call center story, because that one does take some time to set up. Let me see what else we got here. We just did one about... We're all depressed. You're all, oh, man. We did something funny. That sure was sad. He's cracking all those jokes. And then the rest of them, he's like, and the town loved him. 500 people came to his funeral, but his rotting corpse. His rotting corpse soared through the sky. You're like, Jason, that's awful. That's so awful. He's totally liquefied. I said he liquefied. You're like, oh, come on, man. So gross. Let's see what else we got here real quick. We just did that story. I got a ton of stuff. It's all about finding the right one for the right time. And for the right Patreon supporter as well. Let's see. Here's a cat story I can do. I have a story, a horrible story about cats. I have a horrible story about an exorcism that took place in the past year or two. Awful, awful. But yeah, that one, I'm going to have to find the right shout out for that story as well. Someone's like, oh man, why do I support this show? Let's see what we got. Here's a twofer. Because these ones actually I've been thinking about. And I go, these are both pretty short. And I would want to do them back to back. Let's see how much time do we have. Yeah, we got time for these. Because these are both pretty short. Kat, I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the world famous Carbonicopter. We are leaving behind Brazil. Fly us all the way out to a little boy's bedroom. We're about to meet this little boy. We'll call him Jack. He's 5 years old. He's asleep. And we're like standing over him in his bedroom. We're watching him sleep. Dreaming of things that only 5 year olds can dream of. Probably like candy, Fortnite dances, stuff like that. And he wakes up. He sees that he's not alone. Jack sees that there's someone else in his room standing at the foot of his bed. It's an elderly Asian lady holding a clipboard. And she's looking down at the clipboard. She's not looking at Jack. He sees in the darkness this elderly Asian lady looking down at this clipboard. When she does, after a few moments, kind of look up. And she sees Jack is awake. The elderly Asian woman takes off her glasses, gives Jack another look, and then just begins to shake her head at him. And then she faded away. See what I mean by short? There's no buildup for that one. This was posted online underneath the name iBus18. And Jack said, listen, obviously he's an adult as he's posting this. He goes, I have had zero paranormal or even strange events before or since. He goes, that's the only thing in my life that I could even possibly think was paranormal. I woke up, there was an elderly Asian lady shaking her head at me. And slowly faded away. It's a simple story, 100%. Now, sure, I could talk about it for the next 10 minutes. I'm not gonna, but I did want to say this. When I read this story, I thought, is this an anomaly? Or is this the norm? In the sense that, are we constantly being observed by something else? Because we don't know what this is. I mean, you could break this down, pick your poison, right? Depending on what you believe, what conspiracy theories you believe, you could say this is government. This was a glimmer man disguised, and then the camouflage broke out. You could say it was an alien assuming the form of an Asian, elderly Asian woman. You could say it was a time traveler. You could say it was all sorts of things. simulation breaking down, and she was looking at a computer program. She was a technician from some place in the far off future. 100 different things you could think of. None of them really fit. The fact that it fades away does make you think ghost. It's kind of the thing, but it doesn't, there's nothing about it in any other way that would make you think it's a ghost. So it's so mundane that you can't even peg it. You can't even put it into any particular box. But at the same time, I love stories like this. It's so mundane, but the implications are not. Are we constantly being observed by invisible entities? It's funny, we just did a story about religion. That is a cornerstone of most religions. We are constantly being judged. We are being watched by angelic figures or karmic balancers or what have you. And when you die, all of that stuff is laid out in front of you. If someone's not watching you do it, then you could get away with a bunch of stuff. That's not the idea. The idea is there are invisible observers watching you. That's a cornerstone of a lot of different religions. This one kind of takes it. When I read this originally, it really made me think alien. To me, I think that's a default, because what do I associate clipboards with? Scientists. And what do I associate scientists with? Not ghosts. So I don't have any real reason why to think it was an alien. I just kind of thought it was an alien story. We talked about this recently on the show, about how sometimes our prior prejudices can change the way we look at things. But yeah, at the end of the day, you could even say, Jason, it's not even paranormal. It was a dream. This guy had a waking dream. Possible, right? Possible that that is what happened. But if it's not, you would wonder, is it just this kid being observed by elderly Asian women? Or are we all being observed? Like right now when you're sitting in your house, there is someone standing right by the kitchen entrance just watching you. And it's not even creepy in the sense like it's watching for you to fall asleep so it can eat your eyeballs, or wants to see when you leave your kids alone so it can strip the flesh from her little bones. Nothing like that. It's just someone watching you, taking notes. It's not nefarious at all. It's just kind of weird. It's kind of bizarre. Some guy watching you all the time. And then maybe his shift's over and he's like, hey, just to let you know, he watched a lot of Heather Graham movies today, so you're working the night shift. It's going to be pretty crazy. And the guy's like, oh man, not the Heather Graham guy again. Always watches those Heather Graham movies. What did I see recently with Heather Graham? Oh, Suitable Flesh. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you'd feel like you had no privacy. Like, they're taking bets on how big your dumps are going to be. They're like, dude, he went to Chipotle twice today, lunch and dinner. The guy's like, oh no, I'm going to put $50 that he's on that toilet for at least 3 hours. And they're like, oh, well, you must be a newbie here. It's going to be 6 hours. You could be placing bets. People could be taking bets on, like, stuff you do. Or even that, like, that's giving them some sort of agency. They might just watch you. What I thought was interesting, too, is that he said that when the Asian lady shook her head at him, he said it was, quote, almost more of a confused shake. I don't really know what that means. I don't know what a confused shake would look like. Like, she didn't expect him to be awake. When I first read it, I thought it was like she was disappointed. Like, tisk, tisk, tisk. Mm-mm-mm. Shouldn't be awake. Interesting story. Mundane. Are we all under the watchful eyes of the elderly Asian women? Or is it just him? We don't know. Let me go, though, and I got one more story for you. It's also quite short. Cat, let's just walk over there. You already flew the carpenter copter. Let's walk over to this college campus. I don't know exactly where it took place, but we're about to meet this kid. We'll call him Paul. He's a college student. He's walking by an old building on campus. It's around 2 a.m. I'm assuming he's coming home from a bar or a party. He's walking alone by this old building, and he hears... What was that? Clapping? Are people clapping behind him? No, he hears the sound of somebody running up behind him. Like, super fast. Which would, no matter how drunk you are, would cause you to sober up a little bit. He spins around and there's nobody there. He's looking at this long, dark walkway. There's nobody there. But he heard somebody running up quickly behind him. You would probably think, oh, I'm just a little drunk. I actually don't know if this guy's drunk. For all I know, this guy could have never drank in his life. I'm not for sure. So I guess I should stop saying that. But you hear the sound of someone running up behind you in the dark, right? At night, you're going to have an instinctive need to either sprint yourself, not even look back, but take off running, or turn around and see what it is. There's nobody there. He said another time he was walking by this same old building on campus. It was also 2 a.m. This particular time, he's walking by the old building and he hears a voice. He hears a voice right in his ear. And he turns around and he looks. He's the only one around. This one, I think you would say this is a haunting. You wouldn't think, well, maybe it's a cryptid, maybe it's an alien, maybe it's in a covert government force. Probably a ghost. What I think's interesting is what the voice said and how it says it. Paul says that he heard the voice say, "Help me." But it was monotone. "Help me." There's a huge difference there. Right? You're walking and you hear the voice of someone go, "Help me." Something like that. Something with a little bit of emotiveness to it. "Help me." Taking the human element out of the voice. Because that's something that... those words, "help me," are the words that nobody ever wants to has to say, right? Whether it's, "I need help with this test," or "I need help, I'm being held against my will, I'm locked in the basement. Luckily, he left his cell phone here. Help me, please." Generally, they do require some sort of emotional charge to it, whether it's pleading or sadness or terror. "Help me." You're reaching out to somebody. "Help me." But the monotoneness of it, almost like something that is inhuman, not getting it. It's that whole uncanny valley AI effect. Where you can look at something and go, that's not real. Like, it has all the hallmarks of being real, but there's something off about it. It's some sort, the way I was thinking of it, it's not a ghost of a human. It's something that's learning to disguise itself as a human. And it has heard humans say, help me, over and over again throughout the years, or decades, or however long this entity has interacted with us. It's heard humans plead for their lives, help me. It knows what the words are, it knows what the words mean, but it doesn't know how to say them. "Help me." Which is more terrifying than if you were in this position and you heard the voice of a human woman screaming in your ear, "Help me!" And you turn around and there's no one there. That's terrifying, but you can put it in a box and say, "I think this place is haunted. I walked by here and I heard the sound of a girl screaming, help me. It was like right in my ear. It was terrifying. And previously I heard someone running by, and I think maybe we can look in the records of the school. Maybe there was an assault that took place here. You know, we can kind of, for our own mental sake, make sense of this weird event." But when you take away that toolkit, which is what I love doing about Dead Rabbit Radio, that's why I love sharing this stuff with you, is a lot of times we take away that toolkit. We go, I don't know what that was. The old lady, the old Asian lady, alien, we don't know. But if you can make sense of it, you can go, well, that place is haunted. But imagine if you go, it's not haunted. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but I don't like it. But I don't know what to do about it because I don't know what it is. If you have a clogged drain, you need to get Drano. You can't grab a can of Raid bug spray and spray it into your kitchen sink for 5 minutes and go, there, that'll do. It's the same thing, right? It's a chemical. It'll do. And I think that's what happens sometimes when we're trying to deal with a paranormal event and we don't know what it is. We're using the wrong tools. And I believe there are more events out there that we have no idea what they are. I honestly believe we have just scratched the paranormal surface. If you think about it, I know stuff can go back. There's UFO sightings going back thousands of years, and there's ghost stories going back to Babylonia, to Babylon. But really, ghost paranormal research is very new. Scientifically, including looking at the world of ghosts, 1880s at the earliest. And I actually think it's further up than that. Trying to meld the world of science and the world of paranormal. UFO investigations, seriously, started 60s, 70s, and forward. And for decades, it was half of it was government misinformation. I mean, you go back to the 40s with Roswell, of course, but I'm talking about like mainstream UFO investigations, 50s, 60s, 70s. Most of it was government misinformation, disinformation. And the people who did find out stuff, they were just labeled as crackpots. It's all super new stuff. The idea of cryptids, those stories go back to like Europe, ancient Middle East, where you talk about these creatures that roam the lands and they're looking for souls to devour. Yes, we have stories of cryptids, stories of Bigfoot going back to Native American times. But as far as the UFO, the ghost phenomenon, all of this stuff, very, very new. And I think there are so many things out there that we don't even know are out there, so we don't know how to look for them. And when we find them, we don't know how to deal with them. We may find something and go, oh, that's a ghost, and start researching deaths on this campus or people who'd gone missing on this campus and all that stuff. But this is not that. It's something we've never encountered before. I think there's a lot of stuff out there like that. There's so much stuff to uncover in this world, in not just the natural world, but the supernatural world as well. But we will be here to continue covering it. That is my goal. We're going on year 6 of Dead Rabbit Radio coming in, what, June? June will be the 6-year anniversary of Dead Rabbit Radio, and we just keep going. We just keep going like a man strapped to a bunch of balloons soaring in the air. Dead Rabbit Radio will continue to search the world of the weird with you. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great weekend, guys.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.